saving money on all your electrical needs at Menards. From wire, tools, testers, and more, Southwire is the perfect choice for your next electrical project. They offer innovative products to help you get your project done right. Hurry in today and save big on all Southwire products at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big money at
Menards. Hello and welcome back to the Undercut Podcast. I'm your host, Jesse Billington, and tonight I'm joined by Timo Albers-Daly and Ellie Mae Taylor to review the Bahrain Grand Prix. How are you both?
I feel like I need to start this podcast with an apology.
Go on, what are you apologising for?
Because, well, obviously the listeners don't know, but decided to go to a group of members meet at the 11th hour. So I'm incredibly tired. I have quite literally just watched the race about 2 hours ago. I don't really have a brain. I don't really have notes. I don't really know why I'm here. I don't really know what I'm going to input into this podcast. So I apologise.
It'll be a quiet one from you, but I don't see why you've got any excuse. I got home at 10:45. I was sat at my desk until 2:30, editing photographs and getting coffee turned around, then woke up at 7 o'clock and did press day for Classic Car Weekly with all of my photographs and writing from Goodwood Members Meeting.
So, I got home after you.
But did you go straight to bed or did you stay up and do work for a few hours?
I went straight
to bed. She cleaned the whole house when she got back.
I don't know what I felt alive. No, I got home, went pretty much straight to bed, woke up, started work, did work obviously until 4, then watched the Grand Prix.
Don't know what your excuse is. Timo, have you done anything this weekend apart from watch the action from Bahrain?
I watched the IndyCar from Long Beach, which is not what I was going to say. I was going to say watch the action from IndyCar from Long Beach, but the sentence still works. Ellie Mae's tiredness is clearly rubbing off on me already. That's not a good sign for the rest of this episode, if that's how we're starting. And all I'll say about Long Beach is that I interview Kyle Kirkwood for the first time. He wins the next race. This is a theory I'm going to have to test out with other drivers over the course of the season, so I can maybe claim there's some magic ability in this.
Can you go and interview David Malukas next?
I'm not always in charge of who I get to talk to, but I'll see what I can do.
If you could, I think it'd be nice for David Malukas to get a win in. I like him. He seems nice. Anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about the Bahrain Grand Prix, and we'll actually jump into some news before we do that, because there has been some news, and it is important news, and that's that Robert Reed, the Deputy President for Sport at the FIA, has resigned over what he describes as a fundamental breakdown in governance standards within motorsport's global governing body. Reed said in a statement that he was experiencing growing alarm over critical decisions being made without due process or proper consultation. In a quote, he later said, "When I took on this role, it was to serve the FIA's members, not to serve power. Over time, I have witnessed a steady erosion of principles we promised to uphold. Decisions are being made behind closed doors, bypassing the very structures and people the FIA exists to present." This was reported by Andrew Benson for BBC Sport. The news broke on Thursday morning ahead of the Grand Prix weekend. This all comes as the former FIA CEO, Natalie Robin, breaks her silence too over the governing body's serious challenges. Robin left in May 2024 after just 8 months in the role, and it was widely reported that it was a mutual sort of disbanding of the partnership between herself and Ben Salayan. But
usually when you know that's not been the case. Whenever they say it's been a mutual understanding.
Yeah, now there's been enough clear air. She has openly spoken about it and stated that professional procedures were not adhered to and stakeholders were not included in decision-making processes. Robin's comments come as a direct reaction to the departure of Robert Reed. She went on to say, "I'm saddened to see these developments as they threaten both the credibility and long-term effectiveness of the important institution." Fellow lion-haired man and head of UK motorsport, Dave Richards, also recently accused the FIA of a shift in moral compass.
Not good, unless you're hoping to get rid of MBS this year, because his house of cards is slowly crumbling around him, which is interesting. I mean, you read the letter that was sent by Richards and going, this is why I supported him in the first place. And there's like the three main things that he MVS said he would do. And he's literally could not have done more of the opposite of each of them. And you just go, you could have at least done one, you know, or at least attempted to go for one or some such thing. But then it's another thing. You have all of these things in isolation. Yeah, fine. Nothing's going to be perfect, but you add them all up and it just isn't good. And when he's got so many fingers and so many pies to make it look like he's doing stuff, and yet people want him to do far less, because that's what he also originally said he would do, was not that much. He'd be a hands-off president, and we've seen him more than probably any of them, I think. And just then the overreach that he's had as well, and you do wonder, what is he trying to do? Is he doing all of this, kind of the swearing nonsense, the ignoring of valid medical situations, because even though Ellie Mae still doesn't want to talk about that, I'm still annoyed about it on Carlos Sainz's behalf. It does make you wonder, he was smart enough to get there in the first place, him and his friends, so is all of this just some weird smokescreen to try and get away with the stuff that he's obviously hiding from everyone else behind closed doors by getting him to sign NDAs for no particular reason, disbanding ethics committees so that any ethical problems go straight to him and his friend, which always seems legit. And if not, then is just kind of, he's either kind of someone who's smart and is trying to distract us with the kind of nonsense things like the swearing, or he just genuinely thinks he can get away with all of this, in which case it's equally as bad but in a different way, and not someone that you'd really want in charge.
I don't think he's getting away with it as such, and I don't think the things like...
Well, that's the thing. If there's things he can get away with it.
Yeah, because it's not really hiding what's going on, is it? I think the more that comes out, the more we then... We're like, okay, this is not really...
Well, that's what I mean. It's kind of like, if this is the stuff he's... depending on how smart you give him credit for, is this the stuff that he doesn't mind getting out because it distracts from whatever he's actually doing, and no one's focused on that because you're all focused on the bigger story, the swearing, for example? Or is he just big-headed enough to think he can get away with all of it, even though, as you say, he clearly isn't getting away with it, because everyone's going, do you mind not doing all of this?
The problem is that if they're leaving because they don't agree with what's happening, who's replacing them?
Well, yeah.
Are they then agreeing with what's happening?
I don't think the people that are sticking around are agreeing what's happening either. And I think the important element to bear in mind with that is also the fact that elections for the FIA president are coming up soon. And if he's not got a team of people that are backing him, if he's not got the vote of confidence, he's not going to be re-elected. This, if anything, goes further to support the fact that he will not be there in the next, whatever, eight.
Well, that's why I'm suspicious, because, like you say, logically, you'd go, well, surely he can't be there because of all these things. But I just don't want anyone to underestimate him, because he got there already once. So
he got there.
I reckon that's the trickiest. It's the trickiest time the first time. And okay, yeah, it might not look likely, but how many times have we said that about people in elections? So
that was my point. Yeah. How many times have we thought that surely cannot happen?
But I think the controlling and the structural measures of the FIA are different, such that I don't think
we're
in a similar situation than we are in some other globally political scenarios, let's say. So I think that there is hope on the horizon for the FIA amidst the fact that we've currently got a sinking ship with every rat possible fleeing from it. And I say rat in a positive sense. I don't mean that they're the problem. It's the
sinking ship
that's the problem. You've just simply got to get off of it. I didn't make that.
More of a Titanic reference would be better.
It's lifeboats leaving a sinking cruise liner. And unfortunately, that cruise liner has run itself into an iceberg and unfortunately found that nobody wants to be on the bridge. So, it's a very interesting scenario to find. And I think as it develops, because almost certainly this will not be the last of it, and this is why I sort of wrote it all out as we came through the Christmas break when some of these names first started leaving, I was like, this is going to be something to watch. And sure enough, here we are 4 months down the line, and it's become something to watch once more, especially if you saw the way that Lewis Hamilton snubbed an embrace from Ben Sulayem after the Grand Prix or after qualifying. I can't remember which session it was, but he was sort of stood there, sort of arms wide, looking to try and greet the seven-time world champion, and Hamilton just blanks him straight past, which was perfect. And I think exactly the response that everyone bar Ben Salayan wants to see, because I don't think he actually has any support within. I think if someone was bold enough to call for a vote of no confidence, it might go through with suspicious ease. But we'll wait and see on that. Less of my speculation about the FIA, more about a different three-letter acronym, and this time it's the World Endurance Championship, where McLaren has announced it'll be joining for 2027. They'll also be tackling the 24 Hours of Le Mans. Their entry will be into the hypercar class with what looks like a custom-built car, as opposed to a reworking of the upcoming W1 road-going hypercar. So going more down the route of the Cadillac and the sort of Ferrari side of things, as opposed to Aston Martin taking an existing car and going, make an endurance car. Not they're having a great deal of success with that, because it's quite hard to make the doors stay on, they found. But anyway, that's not the point.
I'm here for it. I mean, WEC is getting better and better every year. 6 hours of Imola this weekend, just in case anyone wasn't aware. And yeah, more the merrier. It's always just amusing every time a new team joins WEC or Elms, and it just makes me go back to, again, I know we got there eventually with Cadillac, Andretti and F1, but it goes, Christ, all this trouble for one team, and then WEC now is like, come on, it's fine.
The other side of that argument is the important one around Audi, though, because Audi pulled out of their World Endurance Championship team and they sort of closed that all down to focus on moving into Formula One to be a mid to back marker, while everyone else is spending time and money and expertise and people and manpower on going into WEC. And you look at the amount of new and incredible teams that are going into it and enjoying success and growing fan bases and technology development that is also a lot more road relevant than Formula One is these days. And a lot of these manufacturers are making those moves because they can see a bit of return on the investment from it, whereas F1, it's just advertising. I think that's the unfortunate scenario it's fallen into, is it's overpaid, overhyped advertising when you compare it to what manufacturers can get from the World Endurance Championship. It's the plain fact of it, I think. And it's hard to say that being an F1 fan. It's easy to overglaze it as a fact. But anyway, speaking of Aston Martin, who we mentioned when we were talking about World Endurance Championship there, when it comes to their Formula One team, Dan Fallows has left, probably ashamedly, because the current car that he's built is not very good, it seems. But anyway, he left Aston Martin Formula One in late 2024, and he's now departing the brand entirely. He joined the Silverstone outfit, leaving Red Bull ahead of Newey in 2022. He then sort of left a week or so before Newey was announced as joining. He was moved to their performance technologies arm and is now set to leave the outfit entirely in due course. It is believed that his sort of rocky relationship with Newey has been a driver in this move.
Can't say I'm too surprised, really, after it was announced that he was being shuffled around a bit anyway. That's usually the first sign of, you're leaving, but we're going to do it slowly and surely, so it doesn't look like you're leaving. And then again, it's one of these, we've mutually agreed to part ways situations, and go, we'll just figure out the best way to exit stage left. Maybe Audi or Cadillac will hire him instead. I don't know. You never think that certain people would turn back up in the sport, and then they do. So you can never say never.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he appears at Audi, considering that's sort of becoming a bit of a hunting ground for old Red Bull guys, now that Jonathan Wheatley's over there as their sort of team principal, having left Red Bull as their sporting director. More on that when we get to Red Bull in a minute. But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
He was the meme of that cat in the dungarees going, what are they doing over there this weekend?
Yeah, he was very, very interesting point of view to be Jonathan Wheatley this weekend. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what Dan Fallows gets up to next, because he is a good designer and a good engineer, but I just don't think that...
not for this Aston Martin.
Yeah, I don't think that Aston Martin was ever going to be in the right place at the right time, and unfortunately I don't know if the structure beneath him and around him was quite correct to actually get his thoughts and processes implemented appropriately. But there we go, that's what's up with him.
Do you think that if they didn't have the correct people for Dan Fallows, do you think they have the correct people for Adrian Newey?
You'd like to think so, just off the pure amount of money they've spent to get him. They'd go, and if they're saying, what do you need? And he says, I want these people, or the closest you can get to it, they'd make more of an effort for it because he's Adrian Newey.
Yeah, you'd think they'd be a bit more forgiving for
that. I know I use logic sometimes where I have no right to, but... yeah, you can see where I'm coming from, at least.
Yeah, there's There's logic to questioning whether or not Aston Martin are willing to actually do what it takes, aside from simply piss money into the wind. But we'll get to them in due course. We'll move into our team-by-team analysis as we break down what happened at the Bahrain Grand Prix, championship order as we go for the teams and constructors. So we start with McLaren. Piastri qualified on pole, finished P1, so he's got a fairly good ratio of poles to wins. Meanwhile, Norris qualified P6 and finished P3. So mixed weekend for one half of the field there.
You've just got to think, where would Piastri be if it wasn't for Australia?
Kind of, you've read my mind there, because I was thinking exactly the same thing. And if he hadn't made the mistake, Norris would be in a lot more trouble right now. And I think he, Verstappen, arguably Russell, as he's still in contention. I say still in contention, Renfrew, he's still in contention. They all know that. And I may be a little concerned, even if they're not voicing that concern, because that was clinical from Piastri this weekend. And like I was thinking about this earlier, aside from, what was it, Budapest, obviously, last year, every race he's won, it's not been like just winning it. He's dominated in a sense. He doesn't come around to mess around. He just gets on with it. And that's hard to fight.
Yeah. He's not edging these races out. He's sort of coming in, doing exactly what he needs to, and sort of not leaving anything on the table, but also doesn't look like he's overstretching it at all.
No.
Comes home with a huge 14-second margin and just goes really good. Although this was the first weekend we've seen him properly excited crossing the line as a winner, like proper punching the air, excited, made up.
It was because of the significance of Bahrain and knowing that he's got that mental achievement over Lando, who's been there for so much longer. It's nice when you're that driver to get those things over your teammate, because you know how much capital that's just bought you.
This was more than just a race win. This meant a lot of other things. I think Piastri's form is hotting up at the moment. First driver to score multiple poles and wins this season. He retains a high pole to win rate, as I've said, and the first driver to lead over 100 laps of Grand Prix this season. McLaren will have a big problem on their hands, though, if they maintain this sort of both of them are number one driver's mindset, especially with Piastri just 3 points shy of Norris now. Another win for the Aussie, even with Lando in second, will see the leader of the championship swap. That's how close we're at. The fact that you can send them home P1, P2, if they're in a certain order, that championship is swapping, and then who do you start backing? Norris's weekend was sloppy, a bit of a shonky set of runs in qualifying, and then a false start didn't help matters. So yeah, there's a lot to be sort of picked apart and improved upon in the number four garage. But meanwhile, over in 81, it's Rosie.
Who was the last Australian that he made to lead the world championship?
Mark Webber.
Wouldn't that be fitting?
Who's Oscar Piastri's manager?
Well, exactly. That's kind of why I mentioned it. Thank you for pointing out the job register.
So, it's going to be one of those things where, well, I hope anyway, not obviously quite how it ended in 2021, but I think it's going to be one of those seasons where we look back, you know, how you sort of look at 2021 and go, well, if Hamilton magic button, wherever it was, didn't
brake bias for Baku and Silverstone and turn one at Monza, it'll be a season that has those significant moments. And we will get to the penultimate final round, and Sky will put together a package of the championship battle, and it will include both McLarens going off the track in Australia. And that will be in there, because they will be the cars that are focused on.
It's already in there now, and we're only in the fourth race of the season. So
they've got the premier profile, and sort of at the start of the timeline, that clip is in there somewhere. They've got it ready to go.
Who do you think there'll be other drivers up there with them?
I'd like to think so, because it's a team that's taking. Well, that's the thing, right? Because every team bar Red Bull has another driver that's going to take points off their teammate for a championship battle. Red Bull is the only team that doesn't have that. I think that will drop away with Mercedes over the course of the year, because Antonelli is good, but it's not going to be that good for this year. Ferrari depends if they can get their act together, but you'll have at least maybe Max and George close by to keep them on their toes. I feel like those two remind me of Charles last year. There's a chance, but it depends. Absolutely. And because this year it's obviously not going to get wrapped up. I'll be surprised if it gets wrapped up before the end of the season. So they'll just be there, kind of, what was it, 2010 kind of situation where Lewis is, what was it, 27 points back, or not quite, but you know, that kind of margin, and going, it's doable, it's unlikely, but also just a bit of extra pressure on these two up front. So if you do decide to take each other out, George Russell just somehow becomes world champion and everyone's gone, how the hell did that happen?
Yeah.
That's the thing. If someone makes a, if either of those drivers make a mistake, anything like that, Russell's been there the entire time. It's, I know
Because
it's
Lewis finishing
not
positions fifth.
happened.
Sorry.
And it's like, you know, it's not happened that many a times where there's been like a driver that's won with so little wins and things like that. But sometimes consistency has just been enough to win a world championship.
Well, exactly. That's how Alex Palou over in IndyCar has been so dominant the last few years. He knows that he doesn't need to win every race. I mean, he didn't win yesterday, but he was second. And even Kyle Kirkwood was saying after the race, don't get me wrong, I'm very happy right now, but I'm not happy he's second because that doesn't help us in the long run. And it's like, yeah, because he knows he doesn't need to win every race. So Russell maybe knows he doesn't have the car, but the car is still pretty good and it's good enough to get him there consistently, like you say. And you're saying, Jesse, that they're going to have to make a decision about choosing between the two of them. If it continues at the rate it's going, I don't think so, because Norris seems to have reverted a little bit back to last year's spec of himself. He was all guns blazing in Australia and kind of this new year, new me sort of thing. I've learned from everything. But since the start of China, he's not been there when it started to go wrong. He's not been able to bounce back as quickly. It doesn't come across that way. And it feels like he gets in the way of himself and he's not coping with everything as well as he thought he was going to be able to. And if that keeps going, Piastri's just going to keep doing what Piastri's doing. And even if he gets third or whatever, he'll have more self-induced mistakes. And Piastri will just capitalize on that. He won't need to do anything. It won't necessarily be a turn one Monza incident between the two of them. It'll just be Norris bowing off and he'll do a Leclerc in from the Castellet and he'll take himself out of the equation.
He'll
He,
overpush, he'll lead to his own problems.
yeah, and I think because
He's always been his own worst enemy.
yes, he has, and he, I think he needs to change his mindset because he's too hard on himself after every race. What he needs to do is just forget about it and just move on and think towards the future and just completely forget about it, because I think that is what hinders him sometimes. He just he thinks too much about his mistakes. He just needs
That's
to,
how you breed more of them.
yes. And then it spirals.
Come back to us for more psychological tips in the F1 show.
Yeah, I think the one of the important sort of little statistic I've got off of my big spreadsheet is average finishing positions so far. Norris, Piastri, and Verstappen all tied on 3.2 with Russell at 3.4. I think as we get a changeable season to come, that's going to shift as it goes on. But it's so tricky to start trying to keep trying to call it because we're only what one, two, three, four rounds
Well,
in.
that's why I kind of agree with what Eli Mo was saying about 2021. It's and why we're all collectively annoyed at Ferrari, which we'll get to, because it's one of these seasons where everything matters so much more, because you can't, you'll be able to, as much as it's not a win or lose a championship on these points, it's a tale told across the course of a season. You will be able to point at moments and go, that didn't help you though, did it?
Yeah, there'll be those moments where you can go, this is where it went wrong for you. Meanwhile, moments where it should have gone wrong would be the title for the next team. Mercedes, Russell qualified third, Antonelli qualified fifth. Russell brings it home P2, Antonelli P11. There's a rumor that George is signing a contract extension until 2028, worth reportedly $30 million a season. And it's a good thing he has a Monaco
I'd be
address.
doing that if I were him. Make
Yeah.
hay while the sun shines.
Yeah. His performances at the moment are worth it, I'd say. Even in the face of technical issues, he's proving brilliantly consistent, and you can build a good team around consistent, I think, is the important thing. Antonelli, not the perfect weekend for him, but his racecraft is truly the work of the devil. Lovely stuff. The fact that this is his first weekend not finishing in the points says a lot about his championship or his season so far.
I think we said back in China or Japan that if and when, and more obviously a case of where, if and, yeah, both, he has a bad result such as this, we won't mind or care too much because he's already done so well. He's bought himself some capital on that front, so that, oh, P11, yeah, that's fine. We don't really mind. Whereas any other driver in his position, you'd have been going, not for sure, because they probably wouldn't have the results that he's got. So I think he's, yeah, no one's worried about him.
It's almost like the result he got doesn't equate to his performance in the race, because you saw him doing so many sort of
He was
bold
around so
overtakes.
much.
Yeah, he was around so much, overtaking so many people, and it's like, well, how are you P11? But with the, I think with the race craft that he's got, I think it is really only a matter of time before he gets a podium as well.
Well, no, definitely that's got to come this year. And again, if we have one of those McLaren situations, it could be amusingly a reverse of 2021, where it's not a McLaren getting the 1-2, but it could be a Mercedes getting a 1-2, and Antonelli could be up there if not getting the win. And it was nice to see him fighting Verstappen because obviously we've not had that yet. And when you get something new, it's kind of like when we saw Charles and Verstappen fighting in Bahrain in 22. It was kind of like the first proper time we'd seen them going wheel to wheel. We were like, ooh, we've not had this. That's quite nice. I don't know what to expect here because we know what they do separately, but we don't know how that gels. That could be going one way or the other there. But I think there's more proof on the Russell side of things that he's, as I said earlier, this year's Leclerc. If we look at last year, he's on it and he's there from the get-go and is not the favourite, but is sure as hell going to keep himself in that fight for as long as he can. And if it does go the way of kind of like 2010 or 2012 maybe, then you just need to be there towards the end. And even if you don't get it, everyone will go, fair play for actually getting that far in the first place, considering the competition.
It's an interesting season for them as a team, and I think as a pair of drivers, there's a lot still to be seen. But yeah, seeing Antonelli going up against the big boys and making some absolutely brilliant sends, that one up the inside of Carlos Sainz.
T6.
That was
Held that one as well,
bold.
didn't you?
Yeah,
Bold and a little cheeky
he
because.
comes out of nowhere, and I think he's very lucky that Sainz is checking his mirror as he's turning in, because otherwise that could
Well,
have
it's the thing, it's knowing you've got an experienced driver luxury that you trust, and it's always fun to see when which drivers do that to each other because they know they can do that. It's like, what was it with Hamilton and Leclerc in Qatar last year going, two other drivers or even one different driver in that situation, that is going a hell of a different way, but because you've got that trust.
Or 2022, that opening set of race, that opening race with Leclerc and Verstappen, that
Oh,
constant
yeah,
back and
so
forth,
many nip and
because
tucks.
you know how they race and you know you can trust them and you can lean on them at certain points. And yeah, Antonelli just having that bit of faith that he knows that Sainz has pretty good awareness of what's going on around him, that he can make that absolute dive bomb of a send. And also to then know that you've got the traction to get out of that corner and get away from it as well, because you're not going to have the best entry if you're coming in at a rate
Well,
of
it did come
one.
across a bit like, what was it, Leclerc's on Norris or Norris on Leclerc later on, and you go, it's pretty much the same move and it doesn't work. You just go,
Yeah, Norris
interesting.
isn't able to pull it off. Yeah, which possibly speaks more for the way his season might unfold. But there we go. That's Mercedes ticked off. Third place, double points finish for Red Bull. Haven't been able to say that since the Las Vegas Grand Prix last year, which is quite the statement. Yuki, first driver in that seat to score since then, and he's still coming to terms with the RB21. It's still proving difficult. There are issues beyond the car, though, with Red Bull at the moment. The loss of Jonathan Wheatley to Sauber after this looks like their biggest hit. His job was team operations, proficiency, and sporting regulations. And this weekend, we've seen a lapse in the usually very clean work of Red Bull. Max doing Max things and making the most of a bad situation and calling out Norris for his style infringement was funny. But when you've got sort of
It's
things.
so funny, you just looked up.
Yeah,
Hello.
just like immediately on the
Yeah,
radio, it's
thank
like, got him. But it's the small things. It's the pit stops going wrong. It's the fact that the timing lights and the guns aren't working. It's the fact that whether it was something that Wheatley brought as a sense of magic, or if it was genuinely something that he instilled in the team to do and to practice and to test rigorously, that now he's gone, they're getting lax, sloppy. I don't know. I can't say because I'm not inside Red Bull, but it's just one of those
it's
things.
interesting to watch though, because you always wonder how instrumental certain figures are. And we said this with Newey last year, as soon because he left, and we're kind of like, he was still around, but had kind of the first step of leaving. And then I think Miami was the next Grand Prix, and immediately they were kind of like, surely that can't be because he just left. And yet you see this now with Wheatley, you go, how instrumental are these people? Because bloody hell, they need to get a bit of a team padded out, because that's not good.
Is Red Bull just running on aura? Is that what it is?
I will say though, it's you say not if it was a big hit for them, Yuki kind of made up for that with Sainz, which we'll get to later, in trying to counter hit things. But I did find it interesting. I don't know if either of you two saw, but after the race as well, Verstappen's manager had a bit of a ding dong with Mr. Marco, and that's going to be interesting to keep an eye on as well, because there's obviously more flames on being fanned into that whole situation.
Especially because he's got an exit clause. His exit clause states that if he drops below third in the championship or he's in a car that's no longer competitive enough, he's free to get out. And there are no payments, there are no contracts, no money to change hands. He walks. And he
Yeah,
has
if Marco's worth your Red Bull, why wouldn't you have signed that?
Yeah, because
You'd do anything to
you're Red
keep him.
Bull. You also think, or possibly think, you are always going to have a car that's good enough to keep him there. But now we look at where Red Bull are. They are third in the championship. They are
Constructors, yeah.
on, yeah, they are third. They're on 71 points. So while they're a little way ahead of Ferrari on 57,
That's not going to stay that way.
it's not going to stay that way for much longer if both Ferraris keep scoring points. And if you look at where Verstappen is compared to the drivers around him, he's on 69 points and Russell's on 63. There is not a big gap between them. And when was the last time?
Russell's doing better than him on average, is he?
They're just about doing the same on
Peaking tide.
finishes. Yeah. Verstappen finishing 3.2, Russell finishing 3.4. I don't know how much longer that's going to stay that way around either. There's a lot of questions about how long that situation is going to be tenable for both driver and team. And importantly, where does he go after that? Does he take a season sabbatical and just go, screw it?
He'll
He can
go
do
to
what he
Aston
wants, can't
Martin.
he? Would he go to Aston Martin? I think Aston Martin would pay him the money he wants. Would deserve
I
it.
thought he'd just go and kind of maybe go after the Triple Crown and go, I'll just go into endurance for a bit. And then he can do what he wants. He's got nothing to prove. Let's go IndyCar. Let's go work. Let's just have a bit of fun. I've got a kid in a few months.
Well, he's got the
Listen,
whole.
he's.
A lot of the team have moved from Red Bull to Aston Martin. That's what created, a lot of them created the winning Red Bull.
What if he goes to Racing Bulls?
But
Just to see if he could
still
do better.
under, but then that he's still under like Red Bull management in a way. If
I
he's
know it'd
going
just be
to
funny if it's like, let me just see if I can make this car more competitive than the other one and just see what I could do with that. Because again, at that point, nothing to prove.
he's not going to. I mean,
I
unless
don't think it's going to
anything
happen.
drastically
It's just
changes, he's
funny.
not going to go to McLaren. He's not going to go to Mercedes. He's not going to go, maybe Ferrari.
Imagine Hamilton, Verstappen, Ferrari. Charles are going, how the hell did this happen?
Yeah, I think the one place he won't go is whatever team has Russell. So it's unlikely he'll be at Mercedes, despite Toto, unless Toto Wolff can find the money to make Max Verstappen put up with George Russell. We'll wait and see. But I think it's sort of an understood rumor from the paddock is that if Verstappen was looking to make a move, he said he'd be happy to go anywhere. But he's still not on the best of talking terms with George, unfortunately.
I don't think Toto wants the stress of a Rosberg Hamilton situation
I was going to
again.
say, he's done. He doesn't need that again, does he?
He's got his trauma.
Yeah, been there, done that, got the t-shirt, and not looking to repeat it.
You do know that at the end of 2016, when Rosberg retired, as much as it was a shock and he was scrambling, he went home one night and went, oh
He just sort of
God, I'm
sat
not
down
going to have to deal
on
with
the
that again
sofa
next year.
and breathed the deepest
Just
silence
deflated, just.
ever. Yeah, just like. And then immediately picked up the phone and called Bottas. Anyway, moving from Red Bull to the perilously close Ferrari, with Leclerc qualifying second and Hamilton qualifying ninth, they would go on to finish fourth and fifth, respectively. Hamilton earning driver of the day for that. We'll get to.
Still broken this entire year, I think. Not one of them has made sense this year.
Yeah, there was certainly another driver who, ironically, we'll get to in the next team, actually, who I feel was a better bet for them. But for Ferrari, slowly, slowly, catchy monkey, we're getting there and building things up as they go. Everything is just clicking into place that little bit more as the race weeks go by. And it's not too late to start a championship charge if you're Ferrari. There's a lot to overcome.
Don't get there just yet.
But yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens.
For me, that's
It
not good
looked like
enough.
it was. Go on.
So it's not good enough. Why are they not there already? A Ferrari, come on. Like, you've got two
Yes.
amazing drivers, and they've almost started off the season fed up of the season already.
They're lulling us all into a false sense of security, Eddie May. You know this. This is just Ferrari's strategy. That's how they've been so successful each and every year up to now.
Are they
So we
doing
don't need
what?
to look at it anymore.
Are they doing what McLaren did last year? Start the season off a
Well,
bit,
exactly. I'm
and
pretty sure
then.
that's what we said in the Australia review. Like, oh, no, it's fine. McLaren did this last year and it worked out perfectly fine. So don't worry about it.
At what point did McLaren start really coming back?
What, in last year's champion?
Last year, yeah.
I could probably
More
see
Miami
it.
time, wasn't it, with Norris's win? That was the first kind of, oh, okay, there might be something to do here.
So they've got,
So go a month or
they've
so.
got Saudi Arabia to sort their shit out, and then they've got
And
to
then
be.
maybe Imola. Or do we have Miami first?
Last year we had
Then
Miami and
Miami, isn't it?
Imola. I'm just looking at sort of where McLaren turned it
Oh, that
around.
was it. We had Imola before Miami because McLaren was close then, and we thought, oh, he might get this, and then he actually did it in Miami, and you go, oh, now it's happened. So he was
No,
getting
but I
close
mean,
for a little bit.
no, last year it
I
was
meant this.
Miami. He wins it. Then we think, is he going to be able to repeat it in Imola? He doesn't.
Oh, okay.
And looking at McLaren's trajectory, it's tricky to say when it all started to come together for them because Ferrari sort of tailed off.
Danville.
Ferrari had a terrible Canada where they scored nothing, which closed McLaren up to them. McLaren didn't overtake Ferrari for second until Hungary. And then they didn't overtake Red Bull until Baku. So it
So
took
you're saying there's time,
there's time,
basically. So we
basically.
don't need to worry. So it's all going to be fine.
And it was
And that's the main
only
thing.
Mexico where Ferrari got past Red Bull for second and started chasing that sort of properly putting the pressure back onto McLaren.
Say this to you two then. As long as they do it, does it matter?
No.
No.
Because obviously we'd like them to do it sooner, and we all share your frustrations anyway. Don't get me wrong. No one's more kind of Rowan Atkinson in the garage going, why, than us. But as long as they manage it, I don't think we mind too much because we'll just be so happy to have broken that particular camel's back.
I would rather it go
Although I do feel that
more seasons
expression.
because I like the tension. I like the chaos of it. I
I
like.
thought even the promising thing from this weekend was that they did look for a moment there that they absolutely nailed this race, and that the engineers and strategists finally knew what they were doing that first round of pit stops, because you could see the argument team really, oh Christ, here we go again, and then it worked and they looked like they were just about to flummox everyone else. So yeah, there's optimism. I think one of the other things they need to focus on is just the fact that the race engineers, they need to sound more chipper on the radio, because my God, they sound like they've just witnessed something truly horrific. And then you hear Hamilton at the end of that, and it couldn't have been more of a like contrast in terms of attitude and temperament. And you just go, come on, build it up a little bit more. You can still present boring information in a fun way or an optimistic way. Go after them a bit.
Yeah, there's still things to be built on at Ferrari. Meanwhile, at a Ferrari customer team that's now in fifth, it's Haas. Ocon qualified 14th, finished P8. Behrmann, though, the ultimate driver of the day, qualified 20th, finished 10th in a Haas.
Who shall be that?
Yeah. How did we get here? Ocon had a few offbeats. Can't say otherwise for that. But credit to the team for that rebuild. They got the job done, made a functioning race car for the race. Behrmann,
So I
though.
just know Henry had flashbacks to a few years ago when he saw
Oh,
that.
yeah. Huey's in the background, sort of, duh, 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 oh my God, it's happening. But yeah, five races with three of them resulting in points finishes as a rookie is absolutely brilliant for Ollie Behrmann. At the moment, only really rivaled by Kimi Antonelli, but he's in a Merc, so he's sort of got a bit of an advantage
Well,
there.
that's why I kind of wrote Mercedes B team in a way, because it's kind of no one's kind of noticed them and they're just there. And you're going, how did you manage to get there? And it's especially frustrating, like you say, anyway, with Antonelli kind of zooming about all over the place and he's absolutely everywhere. And then somehow he finishes behind Behrmann. And there's no discredit to Behrmann, but it just shows how good a job he's done. But you're going, how the hell did that happen?
I mean, Behrmann made up five places just in the first like lap. It's just. And he was, again, another driver like Antonelli that's making doing some very good overtaking moves. And it's, I think, between, you look at Antonelli, you look at Berman and their performances, and you think, okay, Formula One is in safe hands with the new generation coming through. Not that the current generation is that old. And I'm going to say that they're definitely not that old because they are my age. But you know that we're going to have very good battles in the future as well.
The scope
Yeah,
of what's to
I
come is
agree.
good. If we've got more Behrmann, more Antonelli still coming through, and we've yet to see the full potential of Bortoleto, let's face it, that Sauber is not going to give him his chance to shine until he can move somewhere a bit more exciting. But for the moment, the talent we're seeing come through, and I will include Hadjar in that pool as well for the time being, we're seeing some incredibly talented and exciting drivers moving through. And
It's been one of those things, right, with the rookies where we've both known what to expect from them and not known what to expect from them at the same time. So we've been equally surprised and not surprised. And we're then left going, I don't know what to think of it, even though we do. And it's just this very odd grey area of going, we're happy that these ones were there because they've justified themselves accordingly. But at the same time, I think the fact that they actually did what was expected has also kind of surprised us because we're used to hearing that and it hasn't been for a good while that we've actually had that. Like with that many as well.
Yeah, with
Only
rookies
that,
coming in
yeah.
actually being a pleasant surprise, and you sort of go, oh, great, we're seeing that talent progress. It's not just sort of people are moving up because either they've run out of Formula Two or they've found more money. It's a case of them moving up because they're talented and sort of worthy of those seats. Meanwhile, a bit of a flip side to that coin, Williams. Albon qualified 15th, Sainz qualified 8th, very tidy. Albon would then finish P12, and Sainz would unfortunately DNF. There is a raceable car in there somewhere. There's just some errors creeping in that are ruining their weekends at the moment. We saw some great bits from Sainz. Albon has found some great pace in that car. It's just trying to nail it down.
Not helped by the fact that Yuki drives into the side of your car at one point and then somehow gets away with it. I don't know how that didn't even warrant an investigation, considering he pretty much DNF'd as a result.
Yeah, and I think for so all of Sainz's woes during the race, I actually think this was the race where you kind of thought, oh, okay, this is now all coming together for Sainz. I think
Exactly,
there
that's why
were,
it's so annoying.
yeah. I mean, I liked his move on Hamilton as well.
Well, again, that's to say, it was kind of, oh, you can see he's extracting more than what the car is necessarily capable of. He's that there's proof that there is that driver in him that we knew was there. It was obviously just taking a bit of time to get up to speed. And then just shit happens. And you go, oh, it was looking so close. And you want that obviously to then happen next weekend, but because it's Saudi Arabia, we dare not be that bold because we know how interesting that can be.
We know how Saudi Arabia can sometimes be when it comes to drivers breathing.
Saudi might Arabia.
Yes, yeah, it could get explosive, let's say. But we'll see how things go for the Williams. It's just you just want them to have one consistent weekend for both cars so you can get a
It's
proper
kind of impressive that they're in
market.
sixth, all things considered, and you go, it's a little bit. We've got a lot of A-spec teams and then the B-spec versions, for lack of a better comparison there, because you've kind of got your Mercedes and your Haas as the two comparisons there, but then you've kind of got. It feels unfair to do, but like Red Bull and Williams, in terms of if you could just have both cars there, but you know what you can get if you've got both drivers that can dial into it, you know what that is then capable of and how much of an interesting threat that could be. But we just haven't had a complete weekend from the entire garage yet.
It's tough being a Williams fan and a Sainz
For a long time, anyway.
for a long time. I mean, we talk about Ferrari, but Williams, oh man.
At least we don't have to say that Pastor Maldonado won our last race.
Don't
Or that
remind
Lance
me.
Stroll was one of the most recent people on the podium for us.
Anyway, we'll move on from. Actually, you mentioned Lance Stroll. That's a perfect point to bridge into the next team on the
I'll do what
list.
I can for you.
Yeah, Aston Martin. Alonso qualified 13th, finished 15th, and Stroll qualified 19th and finished 17th. So I
I
think
do. I do. I
given
know
up.
I wrote. I don't have anything to say, but a reference you'll appreciate, Billington, after a conversation from last week. Alonso in practice did remind me of the scene with the surgeon riding the nuclear missile in the first Naked Gun film.
Yes.
Just a niche reference for people out there listening, but if you get it, you're having a good chuckle to yourself. Ellie May, I'll send you the clip later.
Yeah, anyway, go and watch the Naked Gun trilogy. Yeah, I think there's so little to say about Aston Martin off of the back of this weekend because
there's nothing to say.
There's nothing to say.
they're just waiting for Adrian Newey, aren't they, really?
Yeah, he's not done anything to this car. They've come out and they have simply stated, look, he has not touched this car. He will not be touching this car. He's basically going to be working on the 26 car.
Another reference I have for you then, Jesse. Does it feel like Adrian Newey is the, forget the character's name, but the Dutton son making his way home in 1923, and he's just not there yet?
Oh,
but they're
Jacob,
still waiting.
Jacob Dutton. Yeah, this is like...
Yeah, he's Newey's on his way, but he's not there yet. When he gets there, it should be fine, but he's not there yet.
Yeah, there's like the longest trek back for Adrian Newey, and he's coming, it's going to be fine, he's coming. And we're sort of getting to the point where we're sort of surrounded at the house and a shootout started. We're going, it's fine, he's going to be here any minute, just wait, he's going to get here.
Hopefully. And then you're Ferrari and you realise you're at the wrong place.
Anyway, I mean, there's so little to say about Aston Martin. We'll move on to Racing Bulls, where... I don't know, it feels like there's something to say about them this weekend. A bit of a scrappy one from Lawson, earning a 5 and then 10-second penalty and 3 points on his licence, now up to 5 for this season, for causing a collision. Just not sure.
People complain he's not getting points. I don't know where that's coming from.
Yeah, and Hadjot's pace, I don't know where it's gone. If we use him as a yardstick, maybe the car just wasn't there this weekend. It's so up and down with them at the moment, it's hard to tell. One to learn from, I think, if you're Racing Bulls.
I was frustrated with the penalties there with the stewards when you look at Lawson and you look back at China as to what he could, I don't want to say get away with, but what he was doing there, and that was deemed perfectly fine, and yet the exact same style of move is then suddenly not acceptable. It does make it frustrating, definitely as a viewer, to try and decide how you feel about a move, especially when nothing happens as well, and then equally you have Yuki doing a similar move but with a lot more consequence. And nothing happens. It is frustrating. So it doesn't smack of they're out to get him, but you could easily paint that picture if you wanted to in some respects, because you go just be a bit more consistent, which again is ironically what we've been consistently saying for about the last 75 years.
It's FIA inconsistency. We're never going to get a clear answer on it.
That was the only time Lance Stroll got airtime as well, wasn't it? Just to see.
He was getting past.
Just to see that he got hit by Lawson.
I was kind of surprised that they even gave Lawson a penalty for that, because I just assumed there was an unwritten rule somewhere that even if the other driver's at fault, you'd just automatically blame Stroll.
But now we've got a new driver to put into that spot, Lawson.
I don't like that.
Unless
I'm here for it.
But anyway, that's Racing Bulls. Again, a quick one to whip through for them. Alpine, though, Gasly qualified fourth somehow and then finished seventh. Again, a bit of a miracle. Doohan qualified 11th and finished 14th.
You were so close with getting your world prediction.
I know.
I almost wanted it to happen as well, because I wanted Doohan to succeed. And then I just thought, well, I don't know how to feel about this, because on the one hand,
I get
the other hand.
Predictions. Yeah, but I don't know. The car looked a lot more tangible this weekend. They've figured it out, or potentially. We're at a racetrack the team knows well, because this is where they test, this is where they come every year, and they know how to go here. So it's tricky to try and get a proper yardstick on it. Again, Gasly's raw pace is back, but is that just because the car was in a good place? I don't know. It's so tricky to tell, but there's a glimmer of hope somewhere within that turd that we might be able to polish.
It's a heck of a difference as well, performance-wise, when you look at him and the team in Bahrain last year and go, that's even more difficult to measure now.
Yeah.
Car might like a hotter track, and we're getting to the. I mean, we won't have any more coldest. How many more cold races will we get, really?
Depends on the weather in Imola.
Yeah, Imola will be
Canada.
Chilly. Canada can be a bit cold.
Budapest, Zandvoort.
Las Vegas as well, that'll be cold, but.
Yeah. There's some cold races still to come. There's some warmish ones, but possibly also some cold ones still, so it's.
I was also curious as to why Alpine didn't let Doohan run a bit longer before his first pit stop, because he did look pretty strong during that stint, and it was a shame for him ultimately to have missed out on points as a result, like we say, because He looked the most put together, I think, that he's done all season so far, which, again, we've been over this a few times, but considering the lack of experience that other rookies have had in getting prepared for this season, that's not too shabby. And he seemed really positive after the race as well, and it was nice to see because someone's got to be positive for him, and we know it's probably not going to be Alpine.
It was just, it was a weekend where it came together for them, for sure. And I hope that it remains.
And if you've got Red Bull, you've got Williams, and you've got Alpine in terms of the three tiers, the same team going, come on, we know you can all do this. It's just not happened yet.
Yeah, it's just waiting for it all to fall into place, I think, is the only way to really describe Alpine. But it's progressing in the right direction with doing.
It's all part of the 100 race plan, Jesse. You'll see.
When did we start that 100 races?
500 races ago.
Don't be so pessimistic.
Anymore. Realistic.
Yeah.
Not that 2006.
Yeah. Their 2007 championship, that was when they started that challenge.
You should bring Piquet Jr. back. That's clearly what's missing.
I don't know what he's up to these days. He might be free. Anyway, Stake kicks Sauber, final team on our list. Technically, mathematically tied with Alpine, but because of Gasly's strong P7 finish, it means that Alpine ranks higher. Hülkenberg qualified 16th and then would be disqualified. Bortoleto qualified 18th, finished 18th.
I'm going to start counting how many times they appear on screen.
It'd be a safe drinking game.
It would be a very safe drinking game. I was thinking that. I was like, what is the opposite?
I was about to say, unless you're drinking absinthe, but any drinking game involving absinthe is never a safe drinking game.
I'd just like to have a quiet drink today. I'll just do this game. I won't go mad for it. There we go. If that works. Oh, yeah, no, it's a shame for Hockenberg and yet another driver that would have gotten away with it too if it wasn't for those meddling skids, which I feel like this is already the busiest season we've had for those in terms of screwing drivers over.
The worst bit is I really like that pun as well.
I was quite pleased with myself, I must admit.
The delivery was perfect, and I don't often compliment you, so there you go.
It's also 15 years of the Incredible Hulk in F1 as of this weekend, so there's a fun fact for you.
Well, that is a beautiful little milestone.
It hasn't been great for the Leos, has it, in F1 yet? Hülkenberg and Fernando Alonso.
Like Ferrari, they're just lulling us into a false sense of security, and then you wait.
We're going to get
on Nigel Mansell.
We're going to get an Alonso, a Hülkenberg, and a Sainz podium at some point this year.
I like that.
I'll be deliberately vague in the ordering to help my chances a bit. Because let's
I
face
like
it, too bold enough as it is.
Definitely.
Anyway, that's getting distracted from the point. There's clearly not much more to talk about with Stake Sauber. So we'll move on to winners and spinners. We'll start with winners. Ellie, may your winner, please.
George Russell. Because I think despite whatever was going on with that poor guy.
Did love the phone. Radio DRS. No.
Well, it all goes to the same button when the transponder fails and when you dash.
I know, I just love the idea of just pressing one button and then just, like we said before, just the wheels come off. You go, oh,
you get full. Was it Alguersuari that had that? Or I can't remember which Red Bull or Toro
I know what you're thinking of.
Yeah. It was one of the Toro Rosso drivers from that very early period where you press the button, the wheels ping off. But yeah, it was all going wrong for Russell and somehow he fought through it all going wrong to make it go quite right indeed.
Yes.
Quite a nice mirror image of China as well when he was chasing down Norris when his car was going wrong. I did quite like that.
Norris's brake pedal going long and still being able to fend off a bit of Russell behind. See how many more times that happens for both of them and who comes.
With Oscar out in the lead going, I'm just going to take care of this for you guys. Don't worry about it.
Just going to drive forwards. Don't mind me. Timo, your winner.
Alpine points and positive momentum for Doohan. Can't say fairer than that.
Cannot say fair that. And for me,
also because I thought Ellie May would choose Piastri, so I thought I'd leave that energy going to George Russell. So, never mind.
For me, Haas, both drivers had incredible recoveries and didn't luck into those positions. That was on pure pace and strategy. I think that was a fair showing of their ability this weekend, both as drivers and a team. So, credit to him. Well done.
I think we do, as Timo just sort of alluded to, we do need to give a special well done.
Kudos clap.
Oscar Piastri, yeah. He does need a mention, really, because he didn't put a foot wrong at all.
No, he won the race by 14 seconds. There's not, like, sort of did one of those things where he disappears the distance and then thus doesn't appear until he crosses the line sort of race.
He didn't even appear when he crossed the line. They were still looking at Norris and Russell.
Oh yeah, that frustrated me. So like, come on, guys! It so rarely happens that you don't see it in the full screen, the actual winner of the Grand Prix going across the line. I thought, come on, really? We did this every time for Max in 23. You can't do this once for Piastri.
Well, it's like usually it's like despite whatever is going on track, there could be a huge battle. Usually they'd be like, oh, winner's going to have the final corner.
Yeah.
We need to film that. Piastri, no.
I found it interesting as well in the cool down room. Piastri looked like he could probably just go and do that all again, and the other two just looked absolutely knackered. I thought that in the F3 press conference of Freddie Slater, I said to you about Jesse, he looked like he'd just walked in. He didn't look like he'd just been out racing a sprint race in the desert heat for the last half an hour. He just looked like he'd just come on in and go. That's a whole other level of performance right there, and that's pretty neat.
Yeah, it's an interesting world for Oscar Piastri, and I think he's about to make the absolute most of it. Flip side of the coin then, spinners. Ellie May, yours.
The hard tyres, the electrics, anything that can't be done manually.
I think they should revert to DRS. If they're going to keep DRS, it should be operated on like a flap or a leverage arm that's inside the
car. They have a lever.
So like a sort of full sort of train signalman.
DeLorean sort of.
Junk. Open it and then sort of release the ratchet and it holds itself there, and then you get to the end of the DRS straight and you release it and pull it back again to shut it. Like,
it's like Ted Kravitz said as well, bring back the lollipop man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Nothing wrong with a guy with a sign on a stick, just do and away you go. But hey, we can't have what we want. Timo, your spinners.
If it was for IndyCar, I'd say the soft tire to complement this, because that was the equivalent of the hard tire in terms of uselessness in that race. It was quite amusing to see. But as we're in F1 Aston Martin, don't think we need to tell everyone why. We know why.
Yeah, it's quite obvious. We've barely had anything to say about them. Meanwhile, my spinner, Williams, I think they sort of bottled what could have been a solid result. There was a few issues across the weekend, given the fact the car had pace in it, they just weren't able to properly extract it. It's an annoying one. And then we get to predictions, where I think we're about to have a disagreement because of what was
written. I found a graphic, that's all. That's all on...
What do you mean you found the graphic?
On the F1 website to back up the claim. I'm not just chancing my arm.
Multiple drivers have at least 3 pit stops during the Grand Prix.
But yeah. Two is multiple. It is. It's more than one. You're just annoyed because I'm ahead of you anyway, and you don't want to give me an extra point, so you don't get the you don't get to say this.
Oh, I absolutely do.
Hang on. Let's just check this. BBC Sport.
Because I saw the thing on the F1. I saw the thing that I thought you'd looked at, Jesse, and then I saw on F1's timing.
Sainz classified as having 4 pit stops, isn't he?
Thank you.
Why did Antonelli have 3?
Because he was on the weird strategy. That's why you kept seeing him so much, because he just kept pitting and having to overtake everyone again and again. That's why I was desperately hoping someone else would pick. So I was like, oh my God, someone's actually done it.
Right. So, predictions review. Just 2 points this week. Both of them go to Timo. Pole position prediction for Oscar Piastri and his world prediction for multiple drivers have at least 3 pit stops. Antonelli did have 3, and Sainz had technically 4. 3 would have been fine. So, he ticks the box. There we go.
I'm so glad his third one wasn't his retirement one, because then I know I'd have trouble arguing that with someone. But as that didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
You can be smug in a second. You're doing very well in the other category.
Which I usually do
Fantasy
terribly.
F1 review. And for Bahrain, Itch Energy 266 points, LeVictory 266 points, and Catherine's Curse 257 points. Can't Grow a Moustache P7, The Mixing Pot P9, On the Curbs IndyCar P19, and Red Bull Rejects P52. So same as normal really there. But overall, Can't Grow a Moustache, 783 points in the lead. Lando, 779 points, just four behind in second. And Big Reach, 729 points in third. The Cat Dad's P11, Hopeful Heroes P16, On the Curbs P33, The Dog Dad's P51, and the Red Bull Rejects P52.
We're basically in a me sandwich, because I'm first and last.
Oh, it's what I've
Big
always
sandwich. I knew he was going to say something, so I thought I'd try and get there first.
You forget that I've got individual audio feeds. I can cut you there. Everyone's just going to hear me say something weird. Otherwise, that's all we've got time for on this evening's recording. And, of course, we'll be back in very short order with a preview for the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. In the meantime, though, Ellie Mae, where can the listeners find you if they want more you?
I can actually be found this week.
On
because
where's Wally?
Because at some point I will be posting. I mean, I hope I do this week at least. One
near future.
One members meet post. I'm gonna hope that I haven't really looked at the pictures yet, but I'm hoping that at least there's enough that I can get at least one post.
I mean, all you need for Instagram is just one picture. So,
all right.
I was gonna say that, but I thought that'd be a bit harsh.
Yeah, the odds are ever in your favour.
We'll resort back to Hunger Games.
Timo, in the meantime, if the people want more from you, where can you be found?
You can find me this week over on the Curbs, where I've got an interview out with Moroccan rally driver Johara Banani, and I've got some new articles up on EF1 covering the F2 and F3 from last weekend, and I'll have some key takeaways from IndyCar in Long Beach that we've just had. But as I've not written that yet, I can't give you a link for it.
And if you want more from me, you can, of course, find me on the internet as at Jesse on Cars on multiple social media platforms. I've already got pictures out from members meeting, most of today editing all my shots because I needed to get some out for various different clients and publications. Of course, you can find one of those publications, Classic Car Weekly, on shop shelves from Wednesday with my live coverage from the members meeting, all the interesting stories and bits and pieces that I found whilst I was there. And of course, the Classic Car Weekly podcast as well. So plenty to keep you fed and watered with classic car based content and just general nonsense from me. Otherwise, we will be back in a few short days with a preview for the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. This is a triple header. I'm already absolutely exhausted, but that may not necessarily be to the Grand Prix.
So it's not because of the Grand Prix.
No. But we'll be back with the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix, which if you're in the UK or any relatively normal Christian country, is also Easter weekend, so we wish you all many happy chocolates for that. Otherwise, thank you very much for listening. We'll be back soon.